have the power to decide the fate of our planet and ourselves. This is a time of great danger, but our species is young and curious and brave. It shows much promise. In the last few millennia, we have made the most astonishing and unexpected discoveries about the cosmos and our place within it.
Hello and welcome to the fifth episode of the Physics Podcast in VC Units 1 and 2. We are now starting a new topic, and I must say this is probably one of my favorite topics of the entire physics course. That's apart from motion, of course. This topic is the topic of electricity, and electricity needs to be tackled with a lot of care. It's very important to visualize what's happening and what the issues are at play. Now, the first thing is that we're going to talk about is what is electricity? Well, electricity is defined as the flow of electrons. Now, if you remember from nuclear physics, the electron is that little tiny particle that's flying around a thing called the nucleus. Now, the nucleus often has this thing called protons. Now, in electricity, it's very important to understand that those protons or the nucleus doesn't really move. What moves mostly, or what tends to get transferred, let's say, is those electrons. Now, the electrons are, by all intents and purposes, almost always free to move around. In fact, all around us, we are bombarded all the time by electrons. Those electrons are free to move, more or less, and when we study chemistry, the basic study that we're doing is the movement of the electrons, how those electrons combine with other nuclei or protons to make new chemicals. Now at this stage it's probably important to talk about a thing called conductors versus a thing called insulators or non-conductors. Now let's think of metals. We all recognize metals as being conductors of electricity, and the reason why they conduct electricity is because when I studied chemistry, they defined a metal as protons flying in a sea of electrons. So basically what that means is that in a metal, the structure of the metal often allows those electrons to move around a little bit easier than say in wood, where the electrons are perhaps a little bit more locked in. So in a metal, for example, if I'm able to put one electron in one side of the metal, often that electron will pass through the metal because the electrons are non-localized, what we call, they're not really attached to a proton per se, but they're just sort of gathering in the middle of this, let's call, sea of electrons. This means that metals are very good conductors of electricity. Once again, if I put one electron on one side of a metal rod, I'm likely to get one electron on the other side of the electron rod. Now, if we look at things like wood, where those electrons are being shared quite stringently, I don't know if that's the right word, with all the other atoms, the lattice of wood doesn't allow for those electrons to move as freely. So even though maybe one or two might pass, by and large, those electrons will not be conducted. So if I have a piece of wood and I put two or three electrons in one end, I'm likely not to get any electrons at the other end. The electrons find it very difficult to pass through this. We tend to call wood an insulator or a non-conductor. And I guess the thing to remember here is that there's no one rule that's going to work all the time. So we're going to talk about generalizations. Things like metals will conduct electricity. Things like wood will not conduct electricity. Later in this podcast, we're going to talk about those exceptions. Things like plastics, for example, are often considered not conductors. But when you put a film of plastic on top of your iPad, the capacitance of that plastic actually allows for electricity to pass through it. So there's no hard and fast rule that says that all plastics are insulators and all pieces of wood are also insulators. There is a lot of factors that play. So let's now get started with this concept of electricity. So we've found out before that electricity were the movements of electrons. Now, electricity and current are two things that we need to understand, the two concepts that we need to understand. Now, for now, all of you that have studied electricity before, you need to forgive me for what I'm about to say. But I'm going to talk about current, and I'll say that current is the movement of those electrons. Think about those electrons, let's say in a metal, and that metal being like a river. The river has water flowing through it in the same way that the electrons would be flowing through that metal conductor. Now we're going to use water as an analogy. Now remember, water and electricity don't really mix, so don't think that they are the same thing. But every now and then I'll go back to looking at water as a good analogy for what happens in electricity, and we'll touch base with that particular analogy a lot of times. I guess the other thing to consider as well is that I will be giving those electrons a character. In other words, I'm going to be, wait for that one, anthropomorphizing the electrons. I'm going to give them a character, what the electrons want to do, what the electrons are feeling like doing. Now, you all realize that electrons don't really have feelings, but it does make it easy for me to explain what happens and the behavior of those electrons in those metals. So let's get started. We've established that electricity is the movement of those electrons. Now, as you all know, electrons have got a negative charge. Now, let's talk about that word, charge. We talk about charge as being an essential part of electricity. Now, when we're talking about charge, it's very important to understand what that means. We know that one electron has got a certain amount of charge. Now, we could go and say one electron is worth one negative charge. But the problem here is that there are lots and lots of electrons. The electrons are so small that if we were talking about one electron being one unit of charge, we would be always talking about millions and billions and billions of electrons worth of charge. So what we do is we actually make up a number for charge. We say that one electron is 1.602 by 10 to the negative 19 coulombs. Now, coulomb is a unit of charge that was named by a French scientist called Coulomb, who studied electricity a lot. Now, this for me personally is a little bit confusing. So what I tend to do is I tend to draw another analogy. Let's say I go to the fruit shop. When I go to the fruit shop, I don't go and buy 200 grapes. What I would do is I would buy a bag of grapes or a couple of kilos of grapes. So it's not strange that the fruit shopkeeper will look at me a little bit strangely when I go to the counter and I ask for 1,327 grapes. Now the reason for that is because grapes are small. So what we do is we tend to group them into a basket or a certain unit for buying grapes. Well, the same thing happens with electrons. Electrons are very small. So we need to gather them up in a bunch so we can actually get some more realistic numbers to calculate and to be able to work with them. This is what a coulomb is. Even though I gave you that number before, it's probably easier to think of the coulomb as a basket of electrons. Now, one coulomb has got 6.242 by 10 to the 18 electrons. That's 6.242 with another 15 zeros behind it. Now, that's a lot of electrons, but beware, electrons are very small. So, we call a unit of charge a coulomb. Now I'm going to go back to the grapes in order to hopefully get you to understand what I meant by that 1.602 by 10 to the negative 19 coulombs. Let's say that my bag of grapes has 100 grapes. It would mean that one grape would be 1/100th of a bag. This is the same thing as what I meant before. One electron is 1.602 by 10 to the negative 19 coulombs. So hopefully that lets you understand that number. In essence, they are the same, but often in textbooks, they'll give you the second part. They will tell you that one grape is 1/100th of a bag, rather than telling you that one bag has got 100 grapes. In the same way, 1.602 by 10 to the negative 19 coulombs is the charge that one electron has. But I tend to think that perhaps it's easier to understand that one bag, one coulomb, is worth 6.242 by 10 to the 18 electrons. Either way, it's the same thing. It just makes it a little bit easier to understand. So, now that we've done the unit of charge, let's move to something that's perhaps a little bit more fun. Let's start getting our hands dirty in terms of electricity and the behavior of those electrons. I also need to state the fact that I think it's very important to understand what a coulomb is. So, forgive me for spending a bit too long on the coulombs. So, let's have a look at some examples of electrostatic electricity. That's the sort of electricity that tends to build up electrons in a certain physical object. Let's talk about your normal, everyday household balloon. If you blow up a balloon and then you rub it on your hair, obviously depending on your hair, you'll find that that balloon will start attracting little pieces of paper. Now, the reason why that paper is drawn towards the balloon is because the electrons in that piece of paper, let's say, are attracted to a positively charged balloon. Now, it doesn't really matter whether the balloon is positively or negatively charged. The fact is that when you rub that balloon against your hair, you tend to rub electrons in, or in this case, rub electrons out, making that balloon positively charged. Once again, I'll remind you that the protons are not the ones that do move. It's the electrons that are being drawn away from the surface of that balloon. Now, by rubbing that balloon, you charge it positively. So when you actually put the balloon next to some small pieces of paper, and please do that experiment at home, you'll find that the pieces of paper will get drawn up towards the balloon, and that is because the electrons in the piece of paper are now drawn upwards through electromagnetic forces, and it's something that we'll talk about later, towards that balloon. Now, this is a perfect example of what electrostatic electricity is. You're actually taking away those electrons or putting those electrons into an object. Now, let's talk about perhaps another very good example of electrostatic electricity. Enter to the stage the electroscope. Now, the electroscope is basically a piece of metal with a little bit of foil at the bottom, and the foil is able to move sideways. In other words, it hinges on that metal. Now, you can get those electroscopes in the deluxe model, which means that they'll be in a vacuum with one little contact point on the outside. But most labs in schools will have your electroscopes, which have a little thin film of foil enclosed in a little plastic case. Now, the experiment often goes that you get a little plastic bar, you rub it against your woolen jumper or cotton jumper, and by doing that, you are charging that plastic rod with electrons. So there's an excess of electrons inside that plastic rod. You grab the plastic rod and you touch it on the contact, and suddenly you see the little aluminium foil move upwards. Now, why does that foil move upwards? Let's think of it and let's visualize what happens. The plastic rod has lots of electrons in it. In fact, it has an excess of electrons. We call that rod, it's being electrostatically charged because it has more electrons than it needs to have. So when that rod makes contact with the contact point on the electroscope, it will charge the electroscope with lots of electrons. Now, the metal rod will have electrons and the aluminium foil will have electrons. Now, you all know that negative charges and negative charges repel. So what will happen is that because both the foil and the metal rod have got electrons or an excess of electrons that have been passed through by the rod, the foil, as because it's a lot smaller, it will move away from the metal rod, and it'll look like you'll start levitating upwards. Once again, this is caused by electromagnetic forces. Both the metal rod and the aluminium foil flap are both charged with the same charge. Therefore, they will repel. Now, this whole idea of repulsion or attraction between charges is something very important. Negative charges and negative charges will repel each other. Positive charges and positive charges will also repel each other. but a positive and the negative will attract each other. Now, this whole thing about attraction and repulsion is actually caused through electromagnetic forces, and we'll talk about those a little bit later. I guess the concept here is the fact that we're actually inputting electrons into a surface or taking away electrons into the surface. When you actually put electrons in, the object will become negatively charged. When you take electrons away, that rod or balloon will become positively charged. And at this stage, let's welcome the Van de Graaff generator. Probably one of my best and most loved pieces of equipment in the lab, because it does cause a little bit of fun and enjoyment for a lot of our students. Now, the Van de Graaff generator is basically a huge metal ball, maybe not huge, but big enough, that has a belt inside of it, which constantly rubs against the surface. Now, that rubbing motion tends to, let's say, put electrons into that metal dome. Once again, that metal dome is made out of metal, but the metal is actually insulated through a plastic column. So every time you actually start the Van de Graaff generator, this little metal belt will start putting electrons into that dome, and the electrons won't be able to go anywhere because they're insulated. So the metal basically keeps on gathering those electrons and gathering them up as time goes on. After there's been a huge buildup of electrons, sometimes you can put a little earth ball next to it, and suddenly a spark will fly from the big metal dome into the small metal dome. Now, the small metal dome is often a rod that's actually connected to the earth. And so in the next couple of minutes, we're going to talk about some of the basic rules of electricity. We're also going to introduce a concept of voltage, and that's a very important concept. We've already know about current, in other words, the movement of electrons, and voltage is basically the amount of energy each one of those electrons has. Now, as that big metal dome in the Van de Graaff generator tends to gather up those electrons, the electrons keep on building up and building up and building up, and they also build up the voltage. In other words, they want to get away from that ball, but because they're insulated, they can't get out. So as a result, the voltage of those electrons, in other words, the energy of each one of those electrons, keeps on building up and building up and building up until it discharges into something else. Now, let's talk about the first rule of electricity. The first rule of electricity is that electricity will move from high voltage to low voltage. So when I introduce something that's earthed, and remember the earth has 0 volts, the voltage in the dome of the Van de Graaff generator, which often can get up to 1, 2, 3, or 4,000 volts, will actually jump through the air to get to a 0 volt. The electrons are moving from a high voltage on the surface of the dome to a lower voltage or 0 voltage, which is the earth. And that's why you see that spark. Now, often with the Van de Graaff generators, you'll find that if you put a student on a chair, in other words, you insulate them from the earth, and you get them to put their hands on the Van de Graaff generator, their hair will stand up on end. Now, the reason why that happens is exactly the same effect as the foil in the electroscope moving away. The person has their hands on the Van de Graaff generator. The Van de Graaff generator is building up electrons. Because you're in contact with that dome and you are also insulated from the earth, those electrons are now passing into your body. In other words, you're really part of that Van de Graaff generator. And your hair, as a result, also gets a lot of those extra electrons. Now, inside of your hair, the electrons inside the hair try to move away from the electrons in your body and also from all the other hairs. So the net effect of that is that your hair will stand up on end. And that is because of the repulsion charges between the extra electrons that are now in your hair and the extra electrons that are now in your body. If somebody on the ground was to touch that person or the Van de Graaff generator, remember that in essence they're the same thing now because they're both insulated, that person will get a zap. And that zap will occur because the electrons are trying to move from the high voltage of the Van de Graaff and the person to that zero voltage of the third person that comes in that's actually touching the earth. Electricity moves from high voltage to low voltage. Electrons move from high voltage to low voltage. Now, I mentioned before that the voltages that you can get from the Van de Graaff generator are in the order of 1 to 4,000 volts. And you're all thinking, well, how come that person that's getting zapped doesn't die? Well, voltage alone doesn't kill you. What will kill you is a combination of that voltage and the current. In fact, most of the time, it's that current that will actually do a lot of damage. In other words, the number of electrons that pass through your body. The voltage is the energy per electron. So even though those Van de Graaff generators can be charged to around 4,000 volts, the number of electrons is very small. It's enough to give you a bit of a zap, but it's not enough to actually kill you. In the same way that your electric fences or the cattle prods work, they're enough to give that cattle a bit of a zap, but not enough to kill them, because there's just not enough electrons that pass through your body. Every electron that passes through your body, though, is really at a very high voltage. In other words, they have a lot of energy, but there's very few of them. So that's a very important concept. Voltage is how much energy each one of those electrons has, and current is how many of those electrons pass through your body. Now, the other concept that's very important to understand is why the electricity would go through the air. The reason why the electricity goes through the air, or in scientific terms they're called arcing, is because after the electrons get to a really high voltage, they need to discharge. In other words, they don't like being at a high voltage, they like to be at a neutral state. Now, under normal conditions, electrons do not like, and once again, here we're talking about liking, do not like or would not prefer to go through air. But at a high enough voltage, they will arc, in other words, go through the air. Now, as a rule of thumb, and it might not be exactly right, and it also depends on the humidity of the air, for every centimeter of air that electrons go through, it equates to around about 500 volts. So when you see a spark that's, say, 2 centimeters, you can pretty much guarantee that the voltage in the dome of the Van de Graaff generator was around about 1,000 volts. Remember, really high voltage, but low current, low number of electrons. And at this stage, let's talk about a Van de Graaff generator that we all know. It's one of the biggest Van de Graaff generators ever seen, and it's called a storm cloud. Now, you'll recognize a storm cloud because they look like a tower. They are massive. They're in the order of about 14 to 15 kilometers high, and they tend to get charged with lots of electrons. Now, when you see lightning, what you're actually seeing is the flow of electrons through air. Now, bear in mind that for every centimeter that those electrons go through air, it equates to around about 500 volts. Now, those storm clouds are around about a kilometer or two from the ground. So you can imagine, and you can do the calculation at home if you want, how many volts those clouds have. Not only do they have a high voltage, but they also have a high amount of current. In other words, lots of electrons behind those lightning strikes. Now, the reason why the electrons keep on building up is through the fact that those clouds are very high. You understand that air moves from hot air tends to rise upwards. So as the hot air keeps going upwards, it tends to rub against some ice crystals. And those ice crystals tend to dislodge some of those electrons. Now, for this particular case, I'm going to think of it as the electrons sinking down to the surface. I just feel like the bottom of the cloud being negatively charged is probably an easier example to use in this case. So as the hot air inside the cloud moves upwards through the tower, it tends to dislodge some of those electrons, and the bottom of the cloud becomes negatively charged. Now, after a while, the electrons keep on building up and building up, and their voltage keeps on building up as well. It gets to a stage where the cloud needs to discharge. In other words, it's not happy with being so negatively charged on the bottom. Now, most lightning strikes occur from cloud to cloud. So the bottom of one cloud will look at the top of another cloud and say, hey, you're positively charged. I can just arc through the air and now we can both become neutral. But sometimes the bottom of those clouds will actually strike the earth. Now remember that the earth is at zero voltage. So what will happen is that the cloud will suddenly arc through the air and send all those electrons into the earth so that the cloud becomes neutral once again. Now, we're going to talk about the second rule of electricity, and that is that the electricity or the electrons will travel through a path of least resistance. In other words, the electrons are lazy. They don't want to do work unless they have to, and so if let's say a cloud finds a very tall metal rod that's connected to the earth, it will choose that rod instead of actually going through the air. Remember that electrons don't like traveling through the air, so if you're given the option of going through a metal rod, which is a conductor, and that's connected to the earth, they'll do that instantly. Now, you'll find that in a lot of high rises or tall buildings, they'll have a thing called the lightning rod. Now, those lightning rods are basically a piece of metal that's actually connected into the earth or dug into the earth. And the reason why they have that is because the engineers have figured out if a lightning is going to strike the building, being a tall structure, then it might as well strike somewhere and funnel the electricity through the rod into the earth instead of actually going through the building. Now, remember, the path of least resistance means that the electrons will try to grab anything that's tall in order to go through it. Now, whilst we said before that wood is not a good electrical conductor, we're talking about millions and millions of volts worth of energy that each one of those electrons has. And to compound the situation even worse, each one of those electrons, as well as being at a really high voltage, there's also a lot of them as well. So a tall piece of wood, it's not really a big barrier for those electrons getting to the earth. They'll go through just about anything as long as they don't have to travel through air. Now, you'll find that sometimes those lightning strikes will strike a tree. The reason why that is because the electrons are figuring, well, why should I go through, let's say, 15, 20, 50 meters of air when I could just strike a tree which has wood in it? And yeah, sure, wood is not a great conductor, but inside the tree there's a nice electrically conductive sap. So the lightning tends to choose the tree because it's taller and a lot easier to make it to the earth. So in a lightning strike, the worst thing you could possibly do is get yourself under a tree. There's been a lot of times where people have taken shelter under the tree just to find out that the tree has exploded and all this hot sap has been placed all over their body. Not a great way to go. So in a lightning storm, what is the best thing to do? Well, one of the best things that you could do is to get inside your car. Now, there's a little bit of a myth behind why cars are safer than other places. And I guess a lot of people say, well, the car is insulated by rubber tires. Rubber is not a very good electrical conductor. Therefore, the cars are safe because of the tires. That's not strictly true. And the logic behind it is this. The lightning has actually just traveled through 1.5 kilometers worth of air. Not a great electrical conductor, but it's managed to do so. A few centimeters of rubber isn't going to stop that electricity getting to the earth. So the logic behind that particular answer isn't great. The reason why the car is a safe place to be in a lightning storm is because of a thing we call a Tesla cage. A Tesla cage is a cage made out of metal. And think about it this way. When the lightning, even if the lightning was to strike the car, when and if it does so, the lightning will not travel through you because there is an easier path around the car. The metal of the car will actually funnel that lightning around you and back into the earth, through the tires, mind you. So you will actually come out of that lightning strike unscathed. Now, there's a few warning signs when a lightning is about to strike around you. One of the first warning signs is that the hair on the back of your neck will start standing up, and you'll feel that very, very quickly. If this happens, get out, and get out fast. The reason why that happens, once again, is the same thing as the electroscope. There's an excess of electrons in the air. You are now part of that, let's call, massive Van de Graaff generator. So the electrons in your hair will repel all the other electrons in your hair and your body. And you'll actually find yourself that if you go within the field of, say, a normal standard lab Van de Graaff generator, you'll find the same sort of thing. The hairs will start standing on end because of that electrostatic charge that you're feeling. One of the best things you can do, if you don't have a car to go to, is to get anywhere that is similar to a Tesla cage. Anything that envelops you inside a metal cage. Now, sometimes you'll also find that lightning can travel horizontally. And that is because of, depending on the, let's say, ground conditions, the lightning will actually find a better way to actually get into the Earth itself, into that zero volt repository of all electrons, which we call the Earth. Sometimes the ground will be better insulated in some places and not so well insulated in others. So the lightning can sometimes, rarely, but sometimes, travel along the ground trying to find the path of least resistance. So to recap what we've learned so far. The charges build up, in other words, the electrons build up in objects. It gets to a point where those electrons need to level themselves out or neutralize themselves. Electricity or electrons travel from high voltage to low voltage. Now, they will do that through a thing that we call conductors. Metals are very good conductors, wood maybe not so much. If the voltage, in other words, the amount of energy that each of those electrons has, gets too high, the electrons can actually jump through the air. Now, thank God this doesn't happen with 240 volts. Even though your power points in your house have pretty much an unlimited amount of current or number of electrons that can pass through you, 240 volts isn't enough to actually make an arc through the air. But at high enough voltages, the electrons will actually go through air in order to get themselves neutralized. This happens as a lightning strike in the case of clouds, or in a Van de Graaff generator by a little spark, or even sometimes when you're trying to switch your stoves, you'll find that that piezoelectric device that's in your stove will actually arc through a very small gap of air. And how it does it is because it tends to charge up with extra electrons. Those electrons are now building up in a really high voltage, and a few of those electrons will actually arc through the air in order to become neutral again. So, in this podcast, we found out what electricity was, what charges are, what the Coulomb is, and some examples about electrostatic and, let's call, electrodynamic electricity. Now remember, electrostatic is when the electricity builds up, and what I tend to call electrodynamic or moving electricity is then the movement of those electrons. Rule number one, electrons always move from a high voltage to a low voltage. Let me bring that water analogy back to the foreground. Water, for example, on Earth moves from high to sea level. In exactly the same way that, say, the electrons move from a high voltage to a low voltage. Also, those electrons will look for the path of least resistance. In other words, they are lazy, they don't want to do much work, so they'll actually try to look for the best conductor in order to reach that zero voltage. If you happen to be that conductor, and remember that humans are basically 75% of a big blob of saline or salty water, which is a great conductor of electricity. If you happen to be that conductor, then I'm sorry about that, but you will be struck by lightning. I think this podcast has gone for long enough, so I might have to say goodbye for the first part. In the next part, we're going to talk about the electromagnetic forces, we're going to talk about current, and also talk about voltage in a little bit more detail. I hope I haven't confused you too much, and if you have any problems with this, just go back and listen to some of these things. Once again, I appreciate your feedback, and I hope that you understand that these podcasts are made in a little bit of a rush. Often they're very sparsely scripted, and I'm just going on basically any spare time that I can have to produce this podcast. Any mistakes that I've made, please let me know. I'm more than happy to change the podcast. And once again, thank you for listening to part one of electricity, my favorite topic ever.
We have the power to decide the fate of our planet and ourselves. This is a time of great danger, but our species is young and curious and brave. It shows much promise. In the last few millennia, we have made the most astonishing and unexpected discoveries about the cosmos and our place within it.